This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm Matt Fidler, in for Sarah Bohannon. Since it seems like life is now just time between the last disaster and the next one to come, on today's show, we'll hear from the Red Cross, letting us know what we can all do to prepare for the next disaster. And we'll hear how the absence of an iconic Northern California music festival is affecting the local life there. If you have any questions for us, let us know on our message line, 433-9216, or go to our website, mynsbr.org. For Tuesday, July 7th, 2020, this is special coverage from North State Public Radio. First, some news from NSBR's Mark Albert.
For NSPR News, I'm Mark Albert. The coronavirus has claimed another North State life as new infections across the 11-county region accelerate. Shasta County officials recorded the fifth death there, pushing the regional total to 14. Meanwhile, nearly 100 new cases were confirmed since Monday, mainly in Valley counties, putting the total at 1,259. Both Butte and Sutter counties were each reporting 275 cases Tuesday. Shasta County reports 157, Glen 146, Yuba 139, Tehama 94, Colusa 86, Lassen 40, Siskiyou 32, Plumas 13, and Trinity County 2. Across the region, 33 are hospitalized. Statewide, California's coronavirus crisis continues worsening as more patients require hospitalization and the 14-day positivity rate continues rising. On Tuesday, the California Department of Public Health announced it had confirmed nearly 6,500 new cases, meaning 277,774 Californians have contracted COVID-19. Cases are rising at a weekly rate of nearly 25%. Hospitals across the state are seeing more patients, with 7,500 now receiving some form of inpatient care. 2 weeks ago, that figure was just above 5,000. Also troubling, after reporting 50 or fewer deaths Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, health officials reported 111 deaths Tuesday. Asked Monday about an apparent divergence in stats, fatalities remaining more or less static or falling while new infections explode, Governor Gavin Newsom suggested a number of possible theories.
Those are lagging indicators, hospitalizations, ICUs, and deaths. So we are cautious, as well as modestly optimistic, but cautious.
Newsom said the virus may be less acute, but also that daily statistics are impacted by reporting delays, with testing much more available. Younger, healthier people are finding themselves among the infected. While generally less immediately vulnerable than the elderly who caught it in the spring, the outlook remains uncertain. COVID-19 has claimed the lives of 468 Californians over the past week. The death toll across the state is now 6,448. About a month after approving a non-binding resolution directing law enforcement not to enforce any mask orders, supervisors in Colusa County changed course Monday. The board directed that all county employees must adhere to all federal and state guidelines, orders, directives, and statutes related to COVID-19, including mandatory mask use while on the clock. The public is encouraged but not required to follow suit. Drive-through testing will be available Wednesday in Susanville at the Lassen County Public Health Office from 1 to 4. To register, visit Project Baseline and click on COVID-19 or call 251-8100. Daily testing events will continue in Lassen County through Friday. For NSPR News, I'm Mark Albert.
This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm Matt Fidler. I'd like to think that a decade or two from now, we'll be looking back at life between 2017 and 2020 the same way we now think of the early 1930s during the height of the Great Depression. How did they manage? What kept them going during such strife? Well, future self, it was hard, but we got through it because of amazing people and organizations pulling through to help each other out. And there's one organization you always see at disasters lending a hand. That's the Red Cross. This is why NSPR's Ken Duvall reached out to Nuriddin Zayadinov. He's the executive director of the Red Cross's Northern California chapter. Ken starts off by asking, after a disaster like a wildfire where people need to be evacuated, how does the Red Cross pick an evacuation site?
Well, we choose the evacuation locations based on consultation with our local emergency managers and sheriff's office and health and human services in coordination with all the agencies. One of the challenges that you'll probably see is that we don't know where the next disaster will hit. So pre-disasters, we usually go ahead and have agreements with the local shelters, local hotels, and dormitory facilities to make sure our partners know that when needed, we might call them and ask them to open up their doors for us.
Terrific. And does some agency need to request a Red Cross deployment, or is that a decision that Red Cross can implement independently?
Well, there are multiple ways to go about it. So, but the most common that we do work with local emergency manager, like I said, and when there is a significant evacuation and there's a need for assistance, it could be a fire department, it could be the local city officials or the county officials, local emergency managers that do reach out to our disaster line, and we go dispatch and assess the situation and make assessments based on that, if there's a need for a shelter or any kind of housing assessment at that moment.
And it's wildfire season, so that's the kind of crisis that might be most predictable and imminent right now. But what are the criteria that Red Cross uses when they decide to open a shelter or a center? Is it every fire, or obviously not every fire, because some are, you know, not everyone rises to the level of being disaster, but what are those criteria?
Well, we go based on evacuation sizes. You know, if there's a couple of families that are evacuated and it's just a temporary evacuation, we might be opening up a temporary evacuation point where we hold our clients and make sure they are comfortable. You know, we have snacks and water and resources like that. But when we do know that it's going to be overnight or a significant evacuation, then we do, in this environment, we go in a different way than we would on a smaller fires where it's only a couple of families evacuated potentially.
Right. So you have mobile evacuation facilities or equipment that you can set up.
Yes. Yeah. So one of the things that we know during the COVID that is different is, in order for us to follow CDC guidelines and to make sure our staff and our clients are safe and comfortable, our first choice of going about housing at this moment is hotels. So that is different than what we would do on a normal basis in a pre-COVID environment where we would house them in a congregate sheltering. But because of COVID, we will be housing our clients. Preferably, our first route of option is hotels and motels. And the second is non-congregate dormitory shelters where, following the 6 foot distance, safety, social distancing, and to make sure our clients are safe.
I can imagine scenarios in which those kinds of facilities wouldn't be available to you in maybe in a particularly rural area. In the event that you had to actually operate a traditional shelter, are there things that you would be putting in place to meet the requirements for COVID-19?
Absolutely. And we know in our North State, there might not be a lot of hotels and motels that are available for us in some communities, for example. And we might be in a smaller community like in Siskiyou County, where there's not a lot of hotels, but we have to go through our last resort congregate sheltering. Even then, we would follow our safety protocol. We would have a screening before every client comes in, following our public health officials. We work with our public health nurses and the Red Cross nurses to make sure each client gets a temperature taken, gets a screening questions, and gets the answered. Also, when they do come in into the facility, they probably, one of the things that folks will witness is the distancing. It will not be the traditional Red Cross sheltering. Each client will have a significant space around them to make sure they're following the distancing, social distancing protocol. So there will be a lot of different actions and the precautionary moves that we do take to keep our clients safe. And that is based on even to the feeding as well. You know, we will probably have very limited snacking and all of that. That is, again, to make sure there's less contamination and there's a lot, all the sanitizing that our volunteers will continue doing. And again, you know, face mask, all of that will be followed.
And I'm sure that you you prepare all year, and you probably have drills and different kinds of exercises that you go through fairly regularly to maintain your preparedness. As we come into a wildfire season, for example, are there particular things or special things that you do in advance to jump your preparedness up to the next level?
We do. And our volunteers are trained in every single disaster you can think of. And so one of the things that we do when our volunteers sign up to join the Red Cross and be in our team, we go through vigorous training to make sure our clients know how to operate a shelter, know how to deal with the immediate psychological assistance when needed. And also we go through our logistical side as well to ensure we have enough supplies. We're in contact communication so that nothing falls in between when we know a disaster season is about to start. In the West Coast, we are dealing with, you know, with the wildfires. We're already in the midst of it. We've had multiple fires already. And also we're all coming into a hurricane season in the East Coast that will, again, the same challenges arise from that as well.
That's all we would need here is hurricanes as well. Let's add those to earthquakes and wildfires.
Yeah, exactly. And our region is so big, we cover, in our chapter, we cover 14 counties. And that's everything from Nevada to Nevada state line to Pacific Ocean, and from Yuba-Calusa County lines to all the way to Oregon state border. We have so many disasters. We have tsunami warnings in our Del Norte County. And we have a volcano in Lassen and Mount Shasta so that we need to prepare for. And obviously, being in California, we have to be prepared for earthquakes and wildfires that we deal with pretty much every year.
That's Noureddin Zayadinov, Executive Director of the Northern California Chapter of the Red Cross, talking to NSBR's Ken Duvall. We'll return to this conversation after a short break. You're listening to North State Public Radio. Stay tuned.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from Magnolia Pictures and participant presenting John Lewis, Good Trouble, a new documentary portrait of the U.S. congressman whose story and actions have been elemental to the civil rights movement. On demand now. And from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, supporting those working towards a day when no one has to choose between paying rent, putting food on the table, and protecting their health and the health of others. RWJF.org. Support for NPR comes from this station. And from Home Advisor, committed to helping homeowners find the right pros for their home projects. Homeowners can check cost guides, book appointments, and pay for more than 100 everyday projects with the Home Advisor mobile app. From iDrive, providing cloud backup, full system backup, and on-site iDrive appliance to protect PCs, Macs, and servers from data loss due to crashes and ransomware. At iDrive.com/NPR. And from Progressive Insurance, committed to protecting cars and drivers, whether on the open road or having a driveway moment while listening to NPR. Learn more at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE.
This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm Matt Fidler, sitting in for Sarah Bohannon. We now return to Executive Director of the Northern California Chapter of the Red Cross, Noureddin Zayadinov, talking about emergency preparedness.
The best time to prepare is right now. And I'm sure our partners in CAL FIRE, every single emergency management, they've been preaching the same thing. But it's the basic three steps that every individual can make. That's make a plan, get a kit, and stay informed. When we say make a plan, we know things are different. If there's a house fire that the Red Cross respond to the most, And we've responded to over 13,000 house fires across the nation just since February of this year. In those fires, what is your escape plan from your house? Where do you meet? Who do you call? So that's part of the making a plan. And especially in a COVID environment, making a plan is who is, where do you go where it's safe? Who do you contact is very, very important. And on getting a kit, I personally, in my emergency kit, I've already tapped into it a little bit and I am working on the same thing, replenishing. And also, this brings in the new things that we need to put into our emergency kit. That's if we can put a hand sanitizer, hand soap, all the, you know, face mask if there's possible. So all these things that we do keep on a normal basis in our kits, we should add the things to keep us safe from this virus as well. So as you make your kit, as you build your kit with your families, ensure that all of those, you know, supplies are prepared. And we like to say, make sure you have 6 P's. You have the plastics, that's your debit card, your credit card, whatever that is, your pills, make sure they're up to date. Make sure you know, even if you do not have a bottle of your pills themselves, almost all of us have smartphones now. Just take a picture of them if possible so that if you get evacuated for a significant period of time, there's a possibility to get them refilled. And make sure you have 3 days worth of supplies. And that's what you need to worry about. And people, pets, plastics, pills, and just maintain that. And on the staying informed, follow your local officials, follow the CDC guidelines and the local health officials, local emergency manager, your local fire department, CAL FIRE, or any, you know, sheriff's office that we have in the area. So we have to follow their guidelines and what is coming up for us, because our partner's job at the end of it is to keep us safe and informed.
Terrific. And how important are personal documents like passport, birth certificate, social security card? Should people have those someplace they can grab very quickly and take with them?
Absolutely. That's one of the things that people need to have with them at all times. And sometimes we might not be able to grab the original. So one of the best things that you can make is right now, scan them, you know, put them on a flash drive, put them on your phone or somewhere where it's safe. That's your own protection. Make sure it's safe, but you do have access to them in case of evacuation, because as you can imagine, in times of chaos, everyone will be running around trying to find what they need to, like we said, pills or replacing cards or replacing other certificates. So having those original documents, if not the scans, will absolutely help you as a community and help us as the responders in times of disaster.
You know, it comes up occasionally, the question of pets. People are very attached to their pets. And are people sometimes reluctant to leave their homes because of their pets? Do they postpone too long? Can pets be accommodated? Does the Red Cross, have some contingency?
Pets are a family. I am a pet owner. I have a big, giant dog. And knowing my dog and knowing me, I would not want to evacuate if there was no accommodation to my dog. And that's a reality. We know the majority of America has pets at their home. That, you know, it's not just a pet. It becomes a family member. So when we do, again, make a plan about preparedness, we have to include the pets. Right now, because of COVID, American Red Cross is not allowing pets into our shelters. But that being said, service animals are always welcome. So one of the things that we do work in times of disaster, we work with local animal shelter and work with our, again, partners to make sure we have some kind of housing. And where you are, you might have different resources, like Red Rover is another good one to look into and see where we can house your pets and to make sure they're safe. And we've seen in every disaster so far over the years in the North State, folks want to be closer to their pets. And sometimes they want to even stay in their car so that they can. So, you know, right now we have to make a plan. If your pets, again, you know, they are on some kind of prescription or need extra accommodation, right now is the time to think about those.
Great. In the event that somebody has lost track of a family member or a friend, is looking for them, is there a way for them to contact the Red Cross just to ascertain if that person is being sheltered?
So, yeah, we've seen those issues in disasters the size of a car fire, a campfire over the last couple of years. And thankfully, Red Cross has the platform that we use and our partners use called Safe and Well. So you can go to safeandwell.org, ask someone evacuated to see, to register, to make a note that you are safe and in this given location, that if someone is looking, they can go onto that website and find. And also on the same website that you can search for folks and see if they are there. Of course, folks can come to the Red Cross and ask, but the safety and comfort of our clients is the top priority for us. And sometimes that is the privacy as well. We've seen some situations where that becomes challenging. But that being said, if someone comes in, we might ask if the resident is there. We might ask them that there's an individual that would like to talk to them. And it is up to our residents and our clients to see if they would like to go out and make that contact.
Red Cross, of course, famously depends on volunteers to do a lot of its staffing in times like times of need. How can people get in touch with you if they'd like to volunteer, and what kind of opportunities might there be available for them?
Yeah, absolutely. Right now, we know there's a definite need for us. And as a Red Cross, as an organization, one of the things that people look at, that we are a big organization that's a international organization, but we are local. We are, grassroots. Your neighbor probably is a Red Cross volunteer. So every Red Crosser is trained. So one of the things that we do know and do rely on is our giving, our volunteering North State community that is here all the time that we need. And like we talked about preparedness and training, one of the things that we need to do is make sure everyone's trained on how to respond. And folks in the community can go to redcross.org to sign up volunteering and to make a donation and, you know, see what Red Cross has been doing over the, you know, through COVID and through multiple disasters as well, and take a class and be prepared as a family unit.
Fantastic. And my favorite question, is there anything you'd like to add, anything you think we missed or that you'd like to emphasize?
Yeah, one of the things that I just mentioned is we do rely on donations and the volunteers. And as a nonprofit organization, especially in these times, it is challenging for us. So if you do wish to volunteer or make a donation, please do go on redcross.org and sign up to volunteer or to make a donation. And thank you very much.
That was Executive Director of the Northern California Chapter of the Red Cross speaking with NSPR's Ken Duvall. Because of COVID-19, many mountain towns in Northern California, normally bustling with tourists, are quieter than usual this year. That was doubly true over the holiday weekend. Many events were canceled, and it's left locals worried about the economy and less than excited to spend the weekend staying in. Reporter Tessa Paoli heads to Plumas County to learn about what these cancellations mean.
Tiana Farmer had her outfit ready for the High Sierra Music Festival this year.
Sparkles, glitter, glow sticks, you know, all of the festival works, fishnets.
She'll be a senior next year at Plumas Charter School, and the music festival is a tradition.
High Sierra makes the whole town look different. Like, when I walk into the fairgrounds at High Sierra, it doesn't even feel like I'm in Quincy. It feels like I'm in a whole other place.
High Sierra was one of dozens of summer events canceled this year, thanks to the COVID-19 pandemic. Tiana's bummed to miss out on the annual Escape from Small Town Life, and the cancellation is a big problem for local business.
How's your day going?
It's fantastic. Then I'll talk about the Fredway.
John Stefanik manages the Plumas Sierra County Fairgrounds. It's about 60 acres of neatly mowed grass. Normally, he watches the music festival unfold from a cot in his office. He's trying to stay optimistic, but the cancellation is a huge hit for his operations.
You know, that's 20% of our revenue is from the High Sierra for the fairgrounds. For the community, Safeway, they'll sell everything on the shelves.
And High Sierra isn't the only one. Every event that John relies on to keep the fairground running this summer has been canceled. That's a problem for him, but the cancellations also mean a lot of uncertainty for local businesses.
It's not like they're just blowing into town, bringing their own beer with them, and they're making bologna sandwiches. I mean, they come, they spend money.
But it's not just big ticket music festivals that aren't happening this summer. A mountain town called Taylorsville, population 140, 45 minutes north of Quincy, is dealing with a cancellation of its own.
Well, it's a classic event, the Saddle Bronc Riding. It's just like old times. You can
say I'm also a fourth generation cowgirl. My dad, my grandfather, and now my kids and I all have rodeoed.
Misty Bonquio helps organize the Silver Buckle Rodeo in Taylorsville. This is the first time the town canceled the event since 1949.
Money and bragging rights to say I won the Saddle Bronc Riding at the 70th Silver Buckle Rodeo.
The rodeo is the event of the year in Taylorsville. Misty held out until early June to make the call.
And this town, like, triples, you know, just because of the rodeo. A lot of people have called me and are like, what are we going to do on the 4th? We have nothing to do because it's been here so long.
Local businesses rely on the rodeo to stay open year-round. Kelly Tan owns Young's Market in Taylorsville, and she counts on the 4th of July weekend, too.
We just have to make it up somewhere else. We have our hours cut, so we're just controlling our expenses, and you just have to be as smart as you can and hope for the best in the end.
For Misty, the rodeo is more than an economic pillar. It's a piece of what it means to live in Taylorsville.
This also is not just canceling an event, it's a way of life.
Canceling the rodeo is letting down future generations, who Misty hopes will keep the event going.
You never know, they might find that passion and love and go far.
Her daughter Lacey was planning on running this year.
This is where all my horses go to. Well, my main rodeo horses, because they're spoiled. Well, I was gonna try to run for Rodeo Queen. This is the first year we haven't had it, so I don't know what I'm supposed to do.
10-year-old Bodie Kingdon is learning to be patient too. He's been riding horses since he could walk.
It's so fun. I like it so much. So I would. It's gonna suck now that it's canceled.
This year, he was supposed to move up a division to Saddle Bronc. Like everything, it'll have to wait. Tessa Paoli, Cap Radio News.
That story is part of the Rural Reporting Project, a collaboration between North State Public Radio and Cap Radio in Sacramento. Find more stories at capradio.org/ruralreportingproject. And that is your program. As always, if you have any thoughts for us, leave them on our message line, 433-9216, or go to the website, mynspr.org. Today's special coverage was produced by Mark Albert, Ken Duvall, Christian Solis, Andre Bayek, Angel Horacha, Eric Radaville, Kylo Castilla, Phil Wilkie, and Sarah Bohannon. Thank you for being with us. I'm Matt Fidler, technical producer for the show, and this is Special Coverage. Tune in each weekday at 6:30 or catch the rebroadcast the following morning at 8:30. Until then, stay safe, stay informed, and stay tuned.